லவிங் சாய்ராம் என் கிரீட்டிங்ஸ் ஃப்ரம் பிரசாந்த் நிலையம். ஸ்டார்டிங் டுடே ஐ ஆம் கோயிங் டு பிரசன்ட் எ நியூ கைண்ட் ஆஃப் டாக், ஒன் விச் ஐ வுட் லைக் டு ரெஃபர் டு ஆஸ் எ டிஸ்கோர்ஸ் வாக் த்ரூ. ஆஸ் வாஸ் மென்ஷன்ட் இன் தி அனவுன்ஸ்மெண்ட், ரைட் ஃப்ரம் 1940 ஆன்வர்ட்ஸ் வென் ஹீ ஃபர்ஸ்ட் டிக்ளேர்ட் ஹிஸ் அவதார்ஹுட், சுவாமி டெலிவர்ட் thousands of discourses. Sadly, not all were recorded, and even among those that were taped, we here have only about 60% of the recordings. Not all of them are of good quality, I might add. Ideally speaking, we should be having copies of all the recordings made. However, since no proper system of collection and compilation of discourse recordings existed in the early days, our collection is not as full as it ought to be. Even so, we have quite a few discourses with us, and I thought it would be a good idea to revisit some of these precious recordings. By the way, let us not forget that until now, we did not have the voice recordings of the avatars. There are, of course, any number of books about the earlier avatars, but no voice recordings, absolutely none. By the time Shirdi Baba walked the earth, recording technology had made its appearance, but sadly, no voice recordings exist of Shirdi Baba's voice, at least to my knowledge. In that respect, we are extremely fortunate where our beloved Swami is concerned. It is that fact which induced me to try out this new experiment. My idea was not merely to offer glimpses of Swami's golden voice, but also allow you to experience once more the passion, the intensity, and the energy with which Swami spoke. Above all, I would like all of us to understand in some depth what Swami was telling us, besides appreciating the deep concern he always felt about how we were frittering away life without being bothered about the purpose for which God has blessed us to be born as humans. I should stress here that in the ultimate analysis, the essence of Swami's message was always the same. However, the way the message was presented did vary from occasion to occasion. This was understandable, since Swami addressed diverse audiences that range from school children on the one hand, all the way to professionals and distinguished people on the other. The discourse I have selected for presentation today was delivered by Swami on September 3, 1996. For the record, I was the Vice Chancellor at that time. Incidentally, the date September 3 is significant since it marks the anniversary of the beginning of World War II. That is the deadliest war fought to date, a war which was brought to an end with the deadliest weapon invented by man, as if to remind humankind of the futility of violent conflict. War is always a tragedy, indeed, even for the victor, because it reflects how violence has a way of perpetuating itself unless reason intervenes. Sadly, even though there are presently tens of thousands of bombs, each hundreds of times more deadlier than the Hiroshima bomb, humankind is far from achieving everlasting peace, notwithstanding the United Nations and so many other international agencies. If you ask me, in my view, Swami's teachings alone offer the best recipe for solving all mind-made problems. It should be our collective endeavor to make society appreciate that fact and take Swami's message seriously. Requesting you to bear that in mind, let me now get started by playing for you the first clip from the discourse I have selected.
పుట్టునప్పుడు పుట్టునప్పుడు అమృత పుత్రుడై జన్మించు, మనిషి పుట్టునప్పుడు అమృత పుత్రుడై జన్మించు, పిదప వాసనల తోడ విషముయగును, విషయ వాంఛనతోడ విషతుల్యుడగునయా, సర్వశ్రుతుల మాట సాయి మాట సర్వశ్రుతుల ఊట, సర్వశ్రుతుల ఊట సాయి మాట.
As many of you are aware, Swami often began his discourse with a poem or padyam, as it is referred to. In the padyam that you just heard, Swami says, though born as the child of immortality, due to tendencies inherited from earlier births, man literally poisons his entire life, especially through immoral thoughts and unwanted desires. This is Sai's paraphrase of the scriptures. After singing the padyam, Swami would usually give a brief indication of the theme of the day. What is the theme Swami has chosen for this discourse? Let us find out by listening to the next clip.
జ్ఞానమునకు మించినటువంటిది ఈ జగత్తులో మరొకటి లేదు. ఎట్టి జ్ఞానము? భౌతిక జ్ఞానమా, నైతిక జ్ఞానమా, ఆధ్యాత్మిక జ్ఞానమా, ఏ జ్ఞానము? అన్నియూ జ్ఞానములే. అయితే సర్వజ్ఞాన సమ్మిళితమైనటువంటి జ్ఞానము బ్రహ్మజ్ఞానం. బ్రహ్మజ్ఞానం అనగా ఏమిటి? సమస్త విశ్వం యొక్క స్వరూపమును కూడాను ఏకత్వంగా విశ్వసించడమే బ్రహ్మజ్ఞానం.
ఇన్ ద క్లిప్ దట్ యు జస్ట్ హెర్డ్, స్వామి సేస్, దేర్ ఇస్ నథింగ్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ దట్ ఇస్ మోర్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ దెన్ నాలెడ్జ్. What exactly does one mean by the word knowledge? Is it knowledge of the physical world, or of philosophy, or is it spiritual knowledge? No doubt all these are important. However, superior to all these is Brahmajnana or divine knowledge. What exactly is meant by Brahmajnana? Seeing God in everything in the cosmos and experiencing true unity in diversity is what Brahmajnana really means. Well, that is the paraphrase of the clip you just heard. Briefly stated, seeing God in everything, everywhere and all the time, that is what Brahmajnana is all about. That is the knowledge we should be really bothered about. But are we in the least? In fact, how many of us have even heard the word Brahmajnana, sometimes also known as Atmajnana? How many of us are aware that Atmajnana was what Lord Krishna taught Arjuna on the battlefield minutes before the commencement of the famous Kurukshetra war? And how many of us realize that through his innumerable discourses, Swami was all the time telling us about the centrality of the Atma and Atmajnana? Sadly, we do not. And through this divine discourse, Swami is making one more effort to help us. Maybe I shall come back to this theme later, but for now let us move on and listen to the next clip.
ఉప్పు లేని పప్పు రుచి చిక్కనట్టుగా ప్రేమ లేని యొక్క మానవత్వము ఇది కేవలము ఒక మృగ స్వరూపం అని చెప్పవచ్చు. కనుకనే మానవత్వం అనగా మొట్టమొదటిది ప్రేమతత్వమే. అయితే ఈ ప్రేమను ఏ విధముగా, ఎక్కడ, ఎప్పుడు, ఎట్లా దీన్ని ప్రవేశపెట్టాలి అనే విధి విధానాన్ని చక్కగా గుర్తించి వర్తించాలి. ఉప్పు లేకపోతే పప్పును మనం భుజించలేము, కానీ ఎంత పప్పు అంత ఉప్పు కలిపితే అది కూడా మనం సహించలేము. ఒక్క గంటలో అరిగిపోయేటువంటి పప్పునికే మనం ఇంత రుచిని ఆలోచిస్తున్నాము. 30 సంవత్సరములు, 50 సంవత్సరములు, 60 సంవత్సరములు, 80 సంవత్సరములు జీవించబోయేటువంటి మానవత్వానికి కొంతవరకైనా రుచి ఉండనక్కర్లేదా? ఈ రుచియే లేకుండా వాడు ఇంతకాలం ఏ విధంగా జీవించగలుగుతున్నాడు? ఇది ఒక మానవ జీవితమా? కాదు కాదు. క్షణము కూడాను మానవత్వమును ఉండినటువంటి యొక్క పవిత్రమైనటువంటి ఈ యొక్క విలువను మనం ఉపయోగించుకుంటూ రావాలి.
ఇన్ దిస్ ది థర్డ్ క్లిప్, Swami is promptly zooming on to prema or pure love. In almost all his discourses, Swami quickly connected to prema because that was the simplest and easiest way to relate to the Atma and all that follows from it. Please keep this in mind as I offer a translation of the clip we just heard. Swami says, "If dal without salt is tasteless, life without prema is bestial. Thus, first and foremost, humans must manifest prema tattva or the love principle, because love is God and God is love. At the same time, one must be careful about how this love is shown in worldly affairs. It is true one cannot relish dal if it lacks salt. At the same time, does that mean one would like dal if it is very salty? Hardly. We fuss so much about getting the salt component just correct. We pay so much attention to the taste of dal, which is going to be digested anyway within an hour or so. But do we bother in the least, even for a minute or so, about the quality of our life, which could last 30, 50, 60 or even 80 years? Can one call it life if it lacks humanness? Not at all. On the contrary, life must have the effulgence of human values every single second." Swami often used analogies to make his points. In this case, he begins with the importance of achieving balance in cooking in order to achieve good taste. Indeed, balance is vital not only in food, but in many other things in worldly life. Agreed that quality is essential in life. But what about the quality of life itself, especially beyond the purely material dimension? After all, we are more than just flesh and blood. So, should we not pay some attention to that angle also? That is Swami's point. Now, we are all used to thinking of life as beginning at birth and ending at death. Getting life right is thus always viewed from this limited perspective. However, life is much more than that, because the life we are presently experiencing happens to be just one day or one chapter, so to speak, in the continuing experience of the embodied Atma, with each birth being a new day with a new body. As Swami often reminded us, death is merely the change of dress. In other words, getting the quality of right ought not to be viewed merely in terms of getting the right education, the right job, making big money, enjoying luxury, and so on, but in the larger context of life, which runs through many cycles of births and deaths, and eventually escaping from this seemingly endless cycle. Indeed, it is precisely to call attention to this issue that Swami would sometimes sing a stanza in Adi Shankara's famous hymn Bhajagovindam. And in this hymn, Shankara says, "Birth again, death again, and in between, innumerable sojourns in countless wombs. Rescue me, O Lord, from this seemingly endless cycle." We are now ready for the next clip, which is short but important.
ప్రేమయుండుతుడు ప్రేమయ సర్వుల జీవితంబు ప్రేమమయుండు శ్రీధరుడు ప్రేమయ ఆతని సర్వరూపము ఆ ప్రేమ ఒకింతయైనా సవిచూడక జీవితం వ్యర్థము చేయుట మానవ సార్థకంబా. కనుకనే సర్వత్ర వ్యాపించినటువంటి యొక్క బృహత్తత్వం ప్రేమనే. ఇది ఏ మహత్తరూపము? దీనికి బ్రహ్మ అని పేరు వచ్చింది. ఇది ఏ మానవుడు గుర్తించి వర్తించడానికి తగినటువంటి అవకాశం. ప్రేమ ఉన్నది. ఈ ప్రేమను ఎప్పుడు ఎక్కడ ఎట్లా ఉపయోగించాలి? సత్యాన్వేషణ అన్నారు.
Before I discuss what Swami says in this clip, let me mention that this clip is all about God and love, which should not come as a surprise since God is love and love is God. Which is also the reason why we have a bhajan that begins with the words, Prem Ishwar Hai, Ishwar Prem Hai. With that short preamble, let us now try to understand the clip we just heard. In it, Swami says effectively, O man, what a fool you are. You complain, O God, where have you gone and hidden yourself? It is not I who am hiding. It is you who have forgotten to turn on the light of wisdom. You create darkness and then blame me for it. What nonsense. Blame yourself and not me. I am your best friend and will always come forward to help you. It is you who forget me and all the advice I constantly give. Through these words, Swami is basically making the following points. 1. God has neither gone nor hidden himself anywhere. 2. If we are not able to see God, it is because we have created darkness for ourselves. 3. How can we see when there is darkness? 4. Don't we know that the way to remove darkness is to switch on the light? 5. Our problem is that not only we do not know anything about the light, but also the switch. 6. What is worse, we stubbornly refuse to listen to what Swami is telling us about such matters. 7. And that is because we have got all our priorities wrong. Our focus is entirely on short-term gains instead of being on long-term goals. Let me amplify the above, starting with the reference to darkness, light, switching on the light, etc. And this I shall do by recalling a well-known Upanishadic story. The story goes like this. There is a villager who enters an empty hut that is poorly lit. In a corner, he sees something long, thin and curled up, which to him looks like a snake. He becomes frightened and rushes out crying, Snake! Snake! Villagers gather, one of them carrying a lamp. Armed with sticks and using the lamp to guide them, a few villagers enter the hut. Far in the distance, they do see a menacing something lying curled up. Cautiously they inch forward, their sticks held up, ready to strike. When they come closer to the suspicious object, all they see is a curled up rope. The idea that there was a snake was clearly wrong. Instead, it was a rope that was mistaken to be a snake. Commenting on this story, Vedanta goes on to say, In this world, we perceive through our senses. Nothing wrong with that since God gave living beings the blessings of sense perception, which, by the way, was originally for physical survival. Yes, senses do reveal all sorts of shapes and forms, and there is a limited reality to what they disclose. However, where total reality is concerned, and I stress the word total, we should not stop with what the senses alone reveal. True, for animals, reality ends with what the senses perceive. But where we humans are concerned, we would be foolish to stop with what the senses alone tell us. We should look beyond, beginning with inquiry. And that is the moral behind the Upanishad story I just now narrated. Discussing this story, spiritual commentators invariably point out, there was always only a rope and nothing but a rope. What happened was that when the first villager entered, he did not have enough light to see. So, he superposed the image of a snake on the dimly lit form of the curled rope and then concluded that there was a snake. The snake was not reality, but an illusion that was the result of darkness. Once light from a lamp was allowed to shine on the object concerned, it turned out that what was believed to be a snake was after all a rope. Notice that the lamp did not convert a snake into a rope. All it did was to remove a wrong perception or ignorance. superposition of a delusion on a limited reality and mistaking it to be the total reality is what Maya is all about. That is Vedanta's point, and it exhorts us never to be satisfied with what our senses convey. Let us now carry all this over to practical life and the illusions we create for ourselves through limited perception. Take money for example. People think that if they have enough money, they could buy anything, including happiness. This is a mistaken belief because true joy or ananda, as Swami often referred to it, is a quality beyond the material world. How can we access something that is beyond the material world with mere cash, which is something that belongs solely to the physical world? And this is where Brahmajnana comes in. Remember, the core teaching of Brahmajnana is that in creation we must see God in everything, everywhere, all the time. If we did that, we would not regard money as a vehicle for material development, but as Lakshmi, the goddess of wealth. We would then worship money and hold whatever money we have in trust for use in doing God's work as He directs us to via situations He creates in life. Now, all this might sound a bit obscure, so let me at this point recall how Swami would often, in the middle of His discourse, suddenly point to the microphone and say, "This microphone is God." He would then hold up his silver tumbler and say, "This tumbler is God." Next, he would hold up his handkerchief and say, "This kerchief is God." And so on it would go, while all of us would be silently shaking our head and saying to ourselves, "Swami, those things are not God. You alone are God." The difference between what Swami said and what we believed is the difference between delusion and total reality. Our perception of reality is based on what our senses tell us, which is always about the form, shape, etc. Yes, the form, shape, smell, taste, etc. do convey information. But can we draw a conclusion based on limited information alone? In criminal cases, the police try to solve the case based on information and the evidence they gather. If they are not careful and glibly draw conclusions based on inadequate inquiry and limited information, they are bound to end up arresting the wrong person, as happens sometimes. So also in life, unless we are thorough in our inquiry, we would never be able to appreciate why Swami is saying the microphone is God. To understand this better, let us follow up on Swami's remark that microphone is God. Swami has stressed that this does not mean that the object called microphone is an illusion. It is not. The object does exist, as in fact our senses tell us, and does have a physical reality. Swami himself has emphatically pointed out the validity of empirical reality. But he has also cautioned us that beyond the empirical, there exists a transcendental reality, and that is what we really ought to be aware of all the time, by the way. And that reality which lies beyond cannot be accessed by the senses, or for that matter, even by the mind. That is the crucial point. Let us take all this a bit further and do so by noting that it is humans alone who have been able to develop the mic and not the tiger or the crocodile, which have existed for millions of years before man appeared on earth. This might seem like a rather silly and trivial point to make, but it is not. And the reason is the following. Now, all of us are used to the belief that humans can do wonders because of the power of the human mind. That is indeed correct. But we hardly ever spend a minute to acknowledge that the power of the mind actually comes from God. Evolutionary biologists try to explain this power of the mind as entirely due to brain development through evolutionary processes. However, as Krishna emphatically points out to Arjuna, the power of the mind is a mere reflection of the power of the Atma, which is immanent in humans. What Swami is doing is to remind us what he told Arjuna. The only difference is that while he told this to Arjuna only once, our beloved Swami told this so many times and in so many discourses too. The big question is, are we paying any attention at all to what our Swami did into our ears repeatedly? Swami says that if man was able to invent a microphone and follow it up by developing amazing sound systems, it is all because of the power of the mind, a power that has come entirely from God. Since that power has come from the Lord Himself, we automatically have a moral obligation to use all God-given faculties and powers solely for doing God's work here on earth. But are we doing that? Going back to super-sensitive microphones and remarkable sound systems of modern times, don't we see a lot of misuse of these at the present time? Rock bands, for example, blast sound at unacceptably high dB in order to make their listeners feel high. But in the process, they also cause huge damage to the auditory system of their listeners. Rock bands seem to be unaware that the human ear was never designed to face such high decibels. Or even if they did, they do not care. All these rock bands seem to be interested is in creating excitement. And this is one of the misuse of audio technology. Many years ago, when I was serving in the Indira Gandhi Center for Atomic Research at Kalpakkam, I was living in a beautiful staff colony located on the beach. There was a hospital there, and right next to it, there were two small temples. One day, there was a festival, and both temples hired a sound man to play music. This contractor put up loudspeakers and blasted away at full volume, unmindful of the hospital right next to the temples. I tried my best to din some civic sense into the contractor and the temple authorities as well, but neither would budge an inch. They wanted full blast music to please their gods. If the patients and the little babies in the hospital were inconvenience, it was just unfortunate. I am mentioning this to stress how different things would have been if the contractor and the temple authorities had understood that sound systems were God, as also the patients in the hospital. Again and again, Swami told us, I am in you, with you, around you, below you, above you, and so on. If we took that declaration seriously, we would not be doing so many of the things we glibly do these days without appreciating the hurt we are causing to so many, and in different ways too. What happens then to Swami's admonition, hurt never? To sum it all up, merely seeing objects with our senses would not do, because that reveals only the empirical reality associated with the physical universe. Behind this empirical reality, there lies a higher reality, which is the immanence of God in every bit of the universe. That is why Swami also said, bulbs are many, but current is one. What he was saying was that by looking merely at the bulbs alone, we are focusing on diversity. However, if we turn it around and focus on the fact that the same current flows through all the bulbs, we would be looking at the unity that lies beneath the diversity. Brahmajnana is all about seeing the divine thread behind the bewildering diversity that fills the physical universe. I hope you get the point. Assuming that, let me offer you the next audio clip.
నిజమైన మిత్రుడు దైవం ఒక్కడే, అతనే ఎన్నటికి నీ వదలలేనటువంటి మిత్రుడు. అడవులు ఎందున్న, ఆకాశమునున్న, పట్టణమునున్న, పల్లెనున్న, పుట్ట మీదనున్న, నట్టేటబడి ఉన్న అతి నిజమైనటువంటి మిత్రుడిని ఈనాడు విస్మరిస్తున్నారు. అప్పటికప్పుడు కదిలిపోయే మేఘము వంటి మిత్రును అంటగట్టుకుంటున్నారు. ఇవన్నీ మనకే ప్రమాదములు, కానీ ఆ యొక్క సమయంలో మనకు దీనికి అర్థం చేసుకోలేము. క్రమక్రమేణప్పుడు ఈనాటి మిత్రుడే రేపు శత్రుడు, ఈనాటి శత్రుడే రేపు మిత్రుడు. కానీ భగవంతుడు అత్త కాదు, ఎప్పటికీ మైత్రి, మైత్రి, మైత్రి. మిత్రత్వం అనేటువంటిది దైవానికి హార్ట్ టు హార్ట్, లవ్ టు లవ్. ఈనాటి మిత్రత్వము బాడీ టు బాడీ, మనీ టు మనీ అంతే. అవి ఎంతకాలం ఉండేటువంటిది? ఇవన్నీ కదిలిపోయే మేఘాలు. దీనిని మనం శాశ్వతమని విశ్వసించరాదు. భగవంతుడు ఒక్కటే శాశ్వతమైనటువంటి తత్వం. మీరు నమ్మినా నమ్మకపోయినప్పటికీ దైవత్వం అనేటువంటిది అంతా సర్వత్రా నిండి ఉంటున్నాడు. నీవే దైవము, నీకంటే మించిన దైవం మరొకటి లేదు. కాబట్టి ప్రతి విషయాన్ని కూడా మన వేదాన్ని విశ్వసిస్తూ రావాలి. వేదం తెలియకపోయినప్పటికీ పెద్దలు చెప్తేనైనా విని దాన్ని విశ్వసించాలి. ఎక్కడైనా మృగాల్లో పోతుంటే ఒక సామర్థ్య శాస్త్రం ఉంటుంటాడు అక్కడ. ప్రతి ఒక్క వాడు ఒక 5-5 నయా పైసలు ఇచ్చి ఆ చేతను చూపించుకుంటుంటారు. ఈ బజార్ లో తిరిగేటువంటి యొక్క బెగ్గర్స్ కూడాను వాడు చెప్పిన మాటలు నమ్ముతున్నారు. మీరు సాక్షాత్ దైవస్వరూపమైనటువంటి వేదము ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ, నాయనా నీవే బ్రహ్మ, తత్వం అసి అదే నీవై ఉంటున్నావు, అది అంతర్వాణి ప్రబోధిస్తూ ఉంటుండాలి. ఇలాంటి నిత్య సత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క పదములను మనం ఈనాడు విశ్వసించడానికి ఏమాత్రము పూనుకోవటం లేదు. ఏ దమ్మిడికి పనికిరానటువంటి వాడు చెప్పినటువంటి కూడాను మనం విని దాన్ని అనుసరిస్తూ ఉంటున్నాం. కారణమేమిటి? దానిపైన మనకు విశ్వాసం. 9 చొల్లుల తేలుతిత్తి గాని అంత కదిలిపోయేటువంటివి, దీనికి దానికే సరైనటువంటి స్నేహము, గంటకు తగిన బంత అని. అలాంటి అనిత్యమైనటువంటి వారికి అనిత్యమైనటువంటి ఇష్టపడుతుంటారు. కానీ నిత్య సత్యమైనటువంటి దాన్ని, నిత్య సత్యమే దానిని విశ్లేషిస్తుంది. నీవు నిత్య సత్యమైనటువంటి వాడవు. దేహం కేవలం వాటర్ బుబ్బల్, ఏ క్షణంలో పోతుందో. కానీ నీవు నిత్యమే, నీవు సత్యమే, నీవు బ్రహ్మమే, నీవు దైవమే, నీవు పరతత్వమే, నీవే ఆత్మస్వరూపుడు. ఆత్మ అంటే ఏమి? కేవలం మన యొక్క ప్రేమతత్వమే ఆత్మ. ప్రతిఫలాపేక్ష లేకుండా కోరినటువంటి ప్రేమే ఆత్మతత్వము.
Wow, did you hear that? Did you feel the power, the passion, the energy and the compulsion in Swami's voice? That is the way our beloved Bhagwan delivered his message, addressing each one of us personally. Let me now quickly tell you what Swami said in that clip. He says, "You have all sorts of friends who are here today and gone tomorrow. Today's friendship is often based on convenience. It is body to body and money to money. If there is cash in your pockets, friends are near you. Once you run out of cash, your friends disappear without a trace. They are like passing clouds. God is not like that. In fact, He is the only true friend you have. But sadly, you are not aware of that. Being eternal, God will always be with you. Remember, He is within you. The Vedas declare that. If you can't understand the Vedas, at least believe your elders who have studied the Vedas. If you go to the bazaar, you would see people flocking to a palmist sitting by the roadside, paying him a small change, and then listening to him predict the future. People are ready to believe a wayside palmist, but do not have faith in the scriptures. The scriptures loudly proclaim Tattvamasi, which means that thou art, or more simply, you are God. The scriptures repeat this in different ways, such as Pragyanam Brahma and Aham Brahmasmi. Few are prepared to believe in such declarations, although most people are ready to believe in utterly worthless people. This is the direct result of body consciousness. You attach so much importance to the body. Is this body permanent? No. People who identify themselves with things impermanent also believe only in things that are not permanent. Give up this attachment to the body, which is like a water bubble. You know what happens to a water bubble, don't you? Sooner or later the bubble bursts. Why should you believe that you are the impermanent body when you are verily God? You are truth, you are Brahman, you are Atma, you are nothing but God. God is love, you are God, and so live in love. Before I amplify what Swami said in the clip we just heard, let me for a moment go back to Swami's identification of the microphone with God. What he was drawing attention to was that while outwardly the mic is a physical object, it also represents the power of God revealed in this case through human instrumentality. Here, I am reminded of the only time Mahatma Gandhi made a radio broadcast. It happened shortly before the Mahatma was assassinated. The country was being rocked by post-partition disturbances, and in November 1947, Gandhiji was asked to broadcast an appeal for calm. All broadcasts were live back then, and so Gandhiji had to go to the radio station. After the broadcast, Mahatma was asked what he thought of the radio. Pat came the reply, "I see Shakti, the power of God in it." By referring to the mic as God, Swami was actually teaching us to think like Gandhi. Continuing in the same vein, allow me now to recall an incident which happened in Trai Vrindavan in early 1993. I was there in Vrindavan at that time and teaching, and Swami had come there for his annual summer sojourn. One evening after the session with the boys started, Swami asked me, "How do you find the boys here?" I replied, "Swami, these are all good boys." Swami then asked, "How do you know?" "Adharama adhema." I was clean bold and I kept quiet. Not wanting to embarrass me, Swami just moved on, changed the topic, and soon everyone forgot what happened. Much later, Swami made clear to me that when we see a house, we do not see the foundation. But without the foundation, the house cannot stand. Likewise, behind the world we perceive through our senses lies the unseen, namely God. The moment we forget that, we create all sorts of problems, both for others and for ourselves. Take, for example, the radio. Gandhi saw God in the radio, and you would never think of misusing the radio. Today, as we look around, we see the radio being misused in so many different ways, including for spreading lies, hatred, and vulgarity. Indeed, the same is happening with the press, the cinema, TV, internet, smartphone, and so on. Such massive misuse of communication media tools is tantamount to massively hurting God, because malicious communication hurts people, and God is in every person that is being hurt in this manner. Sadly, none of us see it that way, and it is to remove this stupendous and widespread ignorance that we need Brahmajnana. That was Swami's point. Some of you might like to stop me at this point and say, "Listen, I am not able to see the connection between Brahmajnana and the rope and the snake story. Can you clarify?" That's a good point. Let's look at it this way. A person who has acquired Brahmajnana would obviously be a realized soul. Ramana Maharishi was a classic example of such a soul who lived within the living memory of many of us. He spoke little but always radiated shanti and prema, which automatically enveloped whoever was around. Swami has often told us that this aura of love could pacify, temporarily at least, even people with cruel tendencies. Bhagwan would then describe how rishis meditating in forests would never be bothered by wild animals, as also snakes and scorpions. This, Swami said, was because once those creatures came near the meditating rishis, they would automatically become pacific and simply move away. This shows that once love begins to shine from the heart, it does have the capacity to illumine and at least temporarily quench violent and such other negative tendencies in the neighborhood, even if one is not a realized soul. In this context, some of you might recall the real-life story of Hal Honig, which I have often narrated. I will not repeat it today, but those who have heard it would realize that when Hal began to look at a possible assailant with love, seeing Swami in that person, that tough guy became peaceful and did not cause harm. Let me sum all of the above by saying that once one begins to open up one's heart, then several things begin to happen. Firstly, one's vision changes and spiritual ignorance slowly begins to dissolve, even as the morning mist rises as the sun comes up. This is the point of the rope and snake story. This is with respect to the person who experiences love in his heart. Next, turning to the entity to whom love is shown, the entity could not only be a human but even a wild animal. Once love reaches that entity, it becomes pacific, temporarily at least. This is second reaction, which in this case is passive. Finally, there is active secondary action, By that I mean the person touched by love actually transforms to become a source of love himself or herself. We often see this happening in Swami's hospitals. Poor patients come there every day in desperation as their last chance and hope for life. They are admitted and treated with care and compassion and love. By the time they are discharged, almost every single patient is touched by the atmosphere of love, which is to be expected. What is interesting is that many of them are also transformed and turned to Sai Seva themselves. Some do it back home where they come from, while others come all the way to Prashanti to render Seva. This is what I mean by secondary transformation. Here, I cannot resist quoting Gandhiji, who has this to say about God. He says, "He is no God who merely satisfies the intellect. God to be God rules the heart and transforms the senses." Carried over to our present discussion, this means that when we open our hearts and allow the divine prema therein to flow out, it can unlock other hearts and also transform those persons. That is what I mean by secondary transformation. This is like using one candle to light another candle. In the beginning, there was one candle lit and another unlit. After the second candle is lit, there are two candles both lit up, as a result of which brightness increases. It is to promote this kind of synergy that Swami has advised us to engage in collective seva wherever possible. Let me now turn to some of the precautions that Swami wants us to exercise while showing love to our fellow beings. Bhagavan does this with a very illustrative and simple example. Swami says, consider a man who has to deal with three women in his life, his mother, his wife and his daughter. The eyes of this man see three women, all of whom this man loves. But can he speak and act in the same way to all the three of them? Clearly not. To his mother, the man has to show respect and offer prostrations whenever required. At the other end, he has to show his love to his daughter the way a father is expected to. Where his wife is concerned, she is his life partner. Naturally, he relates to her both as her husband and protector and also as the mother of his children. After that lengthy commentary, we are now ready for the next clip.
విద్యార్థులారా, మీలో కావలసినన్ని విలువైనటువంటి వస్తువులు ఉంటున్నాయి. ఆ విలువైనటువంటివి చాలా లోపల ఉంటున్నాయి. వినువలేని ఇనుప పెట్టె దేహంబు పెట్టిలోన నగలు పెట్టినట్టు. వినువలేని ఇనుప పెట్టె దేహంబు. కానీ అయినసేపు లోపల లోపల పెడతారు, కానీ విలువైనటువంటివి ఆ యొక్క గాడెస్ పైన పెడతారా? ఆ పెట్టె లోపల ఉంటున్నాయి విలువైనటువంటివన్నీ. దయ, ప్రేమ, సహనము, సానుభూతి, ట్రూత్, కంపాషన్, అన్ని దాంట్లో ఉంటున్నాయి విలువైనటువంటి. ఇవన్నీ ఏమిటవి? వజ్ర, వైడూర్య, మలకత, మాణిక్య, కోమేనిక, విశ్వరాగం, ముత్యం, పగడం, ఇలాంటివన్నీ లోపల ఉంటున్నాయి. ఇంత విలువైనటువంటివి లోపల పెట్టుకొని కేవలం బయటపడినటువంటి యొక్క ముత్యపు చిప్పు వలె మనం వెతుకుతూ ఉంటున్నాము. సమర్థం ఎంతటి గుణం నేర్పుతుందా చూడండి. దానిలో విలువైనటువంటి ముత్యములంతా లోపల పెట్టుకుంటుంది. చెప్పు నత్తలను చిక్కినంతా కూడా బయటకు నెట్టేసేది. కానీ బయట చిక్కేది మనకు చిప్పలే తెలిసే, కానీ ముత్యాలు చిక్కవు. లోపల మునిగి దానిని ఇవ్వాలి. ఆ విధమైన శ్రమ పడినప్పుడే ఆ విలువైన ముత్యములు మనకు చిక్కుతాయి. కడలే కొడుతరు ముత్తటి తేనికైనడు విడివాయో కరుణయే పురియవాయో. ఓ కృష్ణ, ఈ యొక్క లోతైనటువంటి సముద్రం లోపల నేను ఎంతో శ్రమపడి నేను ఒక ముత్యాన్ని సంపాదించుకున్నాను. ఆ ముత్యమే నా కృష్ణ, కృష్ణ, కృష్ణ. ఆ ముత్యాన్ని తిరిగి చేజారి, తిరిగి ఆయన దీంట్లో పడిపోయేటట్టుగా మాత్రం చేయకండి. కరుణయే గిరిదారి, గతియలే గిరిదారి, గతియలే గిరిదారి, గతియలే గిరిదారి. ఈ గట్టి నాకు వేరే గతి లేదు. ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆవేదన, ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క పరితాపము భక్తుని హృదయంలో ఆరంభం కావాలి.
In the clip you just heard, Swami directs his comments to students specifically and says, students, hidden deep within you are many valuables, but you are not aware of that. You give a lot of importance to the body, but do you realize that the body is only the analog of an iron safe? An iron safe is used for protecting precious gems, Compared to the gems it holds, the material value of the safe itself is insignificant. It is the same with the body whose value is nothing compared to the treasures it holds within. What are those gems within you? They are compassion, love, forbearance, sacrifice and so on, which are like the precious stones, diamonds, sapphire, ruby, emerald, pearls, etc. But the values are infinitely more valuable. You might have seen lots of shells while walking on the beach. Do you know that shells are the covering for pearls? The ocean is smart. It keeps the pearls and throws the shells on the beach for you to pick up because you are after only worthless things. To get the pearls, you have to dive deep into the ocean. Thus it is that Meera sang, "O Krishna, diving into the ocean I picked up a pearl, but it is trying to slip out of my hand. Don't let that happen, O Giridhari, and I have no one to appeal to you." And Meera made that appeal with deep anguish and yearning for Krishna. Do you have such hunger for God in your heart? Are you in pain because your heart is separated from God? Are you afraid of losing Swami? Swami's remarks are quite clear, and all that remains for me is to add some supplementary remarks. I start by reminding that God has given all of us a wonderfully flexible body, 5 fairly powerful senses, with the tongue in particular being capable of speech. And he has topped all of this with a mind that is extremely powerful. However, God's gifts do not stop with just these, as most of us tend to imagine. He has also put within us the heart, the spiritual heart that is, and not only that, he has made it his permanent home. How many times Swami has told us that it's not Vaikuntham or Kailas that is his permanent address, but the human heart. And yet we quickly forget that, allowing in the process the body-mind complex to dominate us in varying proportions. That is what Bhagavan often referred to as Dehabhimanam. And that Dehabhimanam, dear listeners, is the root of most problems in the world. All the way from the individual to the level of human society, through the intermediate steps of family, community and the country. We hardly take time off to reflect on this. Instead, we are quick to blame God for all the problems we have created for ourselves by ignoring His advice. As Swami says, He is the only true and everlasting friend. And the question now arises, how come people forget this? Swami's answer is simple and he says in effect, "Oh man, you are really strange. You buy a good iron safe and place in it not only all your important documents, but also all your costly jewelry and the collection of precious stones you have in your possession. You are well aware that compared to the safe, it is the contents in it that are far more precious and valuable to you. However, when it comes to your own self, you seem to do things the opposite way. Yes, the body and the mind are important. After all, they have been given by God Himself. But do you use them for the purpose for which God has given them? No. Instead, you totally ignore what is the core of your human nature, i.e. the precious gems in your heart, and give all the attention possible to pampering the body and mind. Do you realize that in this inverted priority scheme you have invented for yourself, you are giving more importance to the container than to the precious gems that the container holds? Pay heed to the anguished prayers Meera offered to Krishna, realizing that pearls are not found on seashores but only deep in the ocean. Meera dived to pick up a pearl, and that pearl for her was Krishna. However, she was finding it difficult to hold the pearl in her palms, and was terrified that it might slip away and disappear back into the dark ocean. That is why she prayed to Krishna to prevent that misfortune from occurring. O man, in your busy schedule, do you for even a fleeting moment feel that kind of anguish and agony about missing God? Tell me, do you really?" I have almost come to the end. Unlike what I have been doing thus far, I shall now give you a quick glimpse of what Swami says in the next clip and then play it. The reason I am doing this clip in the reverse order is because After concluding his discourse, Swami always sang a bhajan. It seems appropriate to stick to that tradition in the present case also. Once the bhajan is over, I shall wrap up with suitable remarks, bringing this presentation to a close. Turning to the seventh and the last clip for the day, Swami says, "Therefore, love God. There is no love greater than the love for the divine. Develop love and direct it in the proper manner." We are now ready to listen to the last clip, which is clip number 7.
కనుక దైవత్వాన్ని ప్రేమించండి. దైవంకు మించినటువంటి ప్రేమ మరొకటి లేదు. వారి ప్రేమతత్వాన్ని చక్కగా పెంచుకోండి, దాన్ని సరైన మార్గంలో ఉపయోగపెట్టుకోండి.
ప్రేమ ముదిత మనసికకు రామ 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 దుఃఖమికి చేత రామ నామ అవసముద్ర సుఖద నావ ఏక రామ నామ పరమ శాంతి సుఖ నిదాన ప్రియ రామ ఆధార ఏక రామ నామ మాత పిత బంధు సఖ సభి రామ నామ భక్త జన జీవన ధన ఏక రామ నామ జనర జీవన ధన ఏక రామ నామ రామ 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 రామ
Listeners, that brings me to the end of this first discourse walkthrough as a part of my new musing series. I tried it out in Hong Kong and Japan during my trip there. Since the response seemed encouraging, I have ventured to make this my latest musing feature. I do hope you would come back strongly with your comments and opinions, favorable or otherwise. Before I end, I must refer to the fact that just yesterday, as I was finalizing the script for this talk, I heard the horrifying news about the shooting in a KG school in Newtown, Connecticut in America. As President Obama pointed out, many other mass shootings had occurred earlier in the year, leading to unwanted loss of precious human life. I shall not go into an analysis of this or other similar events where many more died, not only through shooting, but through criminal negligence, especially of safety procedures. Wherever we turn, we see tons of problems, all created by the human mind. The only way to solve them is by appealing to the heart. However, we seem to have locked up the heart and thrown away the keys. Again and again, Swami drew our attention to the heart and its power. In the discourse I presented today, Swami is calling attention to the precious jewels that the heart contains. During the time he was with us, our beloved Bhagavan used these very same jewels, namely selfless love, compassion, understanding and so on, to demonstrate how to solve complex problems both at the individual as well as the societal level. Having taught us for 70 odd years, the Divine Master is now signaling to us, "You take over and continue what I started." The question before us is, are we ready? I leave each one of you to decide that for yourself. Offering this talk at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami, I now take your leave. God bless and Jai Sai Ram.